When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
And you're listening to History Teachers Talking Podcast.
Now part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
All right, this is Peter Zablocki and Thomas Reska, and welcome back to our podcast. Last week we did American Nazis. Today we're going to be doing something a little happier.
Right? Yeah, a little bit on the other side of the spectrum, all right? A little bit of American symbols, right? The history of American symbols, not just a flag to honor, you know, 4th of July and stuff like that, but just a lot of other symbols that are associated with the United States. Definitely wanted to get away from the dark point of history. I guess some of this stuff could be dark too, actually, some of the things we're going to talk about. But American history is dark sometimes. What can you say? But we're definitely going to be a little bit more lighthearted in this one.
I was going to say, what's dark about American symbols? I'm kind of curious now. Like,
what? Oh, well, wait till we get to the one I just talked about before we came on.
Oh, well, I guess so.
Somewhat.
Somewhat. All right. There's a bunch. I mean, when I thought of American symbols, I initially thought of the flag.
Well, that's what we were going to do. Like, let's just do a history of the flag. And they were like, well, there's so many other things too. Let's
right.
Just get a whole bunch of them in here. Like, oh, yeah, that's a symbol. Oh, that's a symbol too. Oh, yeah, that's associated. Oh, yeah, that too. Like, if you just Google like American symbols, just the images that pop up.
Absolutely.
Endless. Before, I guess we start with a flag. All right. This is very important. I feel like there's a lot of these like flag terms. I do have a couple of friends that are like adult Boy Scouts, so don't get me started with that. But there's also this, like, all this special stuff with flags. So, you know, we want to make sure that we, honor it, right? So you have the canton, which is the top inner part of the flag, or the blue area where the stars are, right? You have the field, which is the main body of the flag. You have the fly, which is the bottom length of the flag. You have the halyard, which is the rope or the cord used to raise and lower the flag. And then the hoist, which is the flag side or the width. And that's how you, like, when they say you have to fold it on the hoist, when you fold it into that triangle. If you ever saw that when you're taking down a flag, or when a flag is presented to
like a funeral, yeah.
A funeral or something like that, or when they remove it from a cat, that's how it's folded in a certain way. I know I actually have a flag in one of my rooms that I got that was actually hoisted over the Arizona Memorial in
that's cool.
Hawaii. I got it when I went down there. It actually flew over on July 4th too. They fly a bunch, they sell them. You can buy them there. But like to have a flag that actually flew over the Arizona Memorial. It's in Pearl Harbor. It's kind of cool. My little like part of American history there.
That's kind of cool. But every time I see that, I'm always like, did it?
Well, it's signed by the Admiral of the Navy. So he's
okay.
Comes,
I mean,
so
I guess like, that's
I mean, yeah. And you see, I think they raise a flag and lower a flag like 14 times on it for all these different symbolizing deponents. There's a lot of them there.
You know?
So there's a lot. So they definitely flew there at some point. You know, but maybe only for like 10 minutes. But
yeah, I know. We were at like a Titanic exhibit, and there was a picture frame. And in a corner, there was like a little window, and it was like dark charcoal. And it said, real coal from the Titanic. And I'm like, all right.
What are they saying? I think we talked about this before. I'm going to get a little off topic, but like
all the
pieces of the Berlin Wall that you can buy on eBay.
I know.
If you put it all together, it's bigger than the Berlin Wall ever was. It's that thing too, but. Yeah, it's what it is.
All right. Yeah, like a few things about the American flag. First of all, there's a big contention of whether Betsy Ross really did make the first flag. Basically, the Continental Congress on June 14th, 1777, passes the First Flag Act, right? It was resolved that the flag of the United States be made, and it gets very specific. 13 stripes, alternate red and white, union be 13 stars, white and blue, and all that good stuff. There's a lot of symbolism to the flag that was initially placed there by this flag act in 1777. For those of you that kind of need the refresher here, 1777, we're fighting the American Revolutionary War against England. And we need to create our own symbol because we have just declared independence in 76.
Because we had a flag before that, right?
Yes.
We had some originally, we used to fly the Union Jack, which is a British flag. You see that. And Benjamin Franklin actually called a new flag committee when he wanted to create a new flag. This was in 1775, so right before the revolution. They didn't want to totally shut off their connection to England. So they had this newer flag, which basically was very similar to the flag we have now, but it had a Union Jack in one of the corners with six white stripes alternating with seven red stripes. And it was, I think it was only put up a few times, like on New Year's Eve in Massachusetts, and it became known as a Grand Union flag. And that was technically the first American flag. It's really kind of like a Jeopardy question, if anything like that. But like you said, Pete, once the Declaration of Independence gets signed, like, no, we need a totally new one. We need, they said it wasn't, it wouldn't be politically correct to still have the Union Jack somewhere on our flag. So we have to get rid of it.
Absolutely. And if you notice, the flag of the East India Company, which controlled all of India, is very, very similar to our flag. And that was actually designed on purpose because Ben Franklin and George Washington themselves kind of had this conversation. And at one point, George Washington is quoted as saying that while the field of your, you know, our flag must be new in details of design, it doesn't need to be entirely new in its elements. And they looked at the East India Company flag, which again had the white and red stripes, except where our stars would be, it has the England flag in there. They like that because East India Company kind of was independently allowed to control India while it still showed its somewhat...
Or England. The roots, yeah, in our roots, where we came from. Yes, that's where the colors are similar and stuff like that. Basically put this together, and there was a lot of like discussion. You figure there's a war going on, the last thing you should be worried about is like a flag.
Yep.
But like that's really what they're worried about, like the design of the flag. So they decide it's going to be like a square flag, right, with red and white stripes, 13 stars represent all the colonies. But there are a lot of problems, like should it be a 5-point star? Should it be a 4-point star? Should the stars be in rows? Should they be in circles, right? You had an argument over whether or not it should be start with a red stripe or start with a white stripe. And that one, they actually settled pretty quickly when they realized that from a distance, it was easier to see a flag if it started with a red stripe first. They kind of like box it out and started, instead of starting with a white stripe first. So there were all these different designs, and you can actually, I guess there might be still be out there, these early designs, the first American flag, really, until there's like a committee that kind of decides what they're going to do with it. And like you said before, there's no proof that Betsy Ross actually sold the first flag. That was kind of one of those like things. They knew that she was approached for a flag design, and they, most historians believe she might've had something to do with coming up with the 5-point star, because she demonstrated, you know, how easy it was to make it when you fold a certain way, like how we can make it look and stuff like that.
Well, that first idea of whether she did it or not was actually brought forth by her grandson, William Canby, in 1870. So it's like 100 years later. The grandson says, hey, actually, my grandma was the first one to sew this flag. And historians, specifically the Historical Society of Pennsylvania, where this was brought up, really did extensive research on it. And she did sew a flag, but was it the first flag?
Yeah, they don't know. Yeah, she definitely sewed flags. Yeah.
Yes. And she did suggest a couple changes, right? Arranging the stars in a circle initially and reducing the points on each star to 5 instead of 6. We know that for a fact. Whether she did the first flag, again, that's her grandson's claim 100 years later. And it's really no documentation whatsoever that could be found to confirm that she was responsible for creating the very first flag. Nonetheless, as the flag is created, all those colors and everything has symbolism to it. Again, it's the main symbol of the country. It's our flag. The 13 stripes obviously represent the original 13 colonies. Number of stars in the flag represent the number of states in the Union, obviously. The stars on the blue field represent the creation of a new constellation. That's the whole premise of the stars. The red symbolizes hardiness and valor. The white symbolizes purity and innocence. And the blue represents vigilance, perseverance, and justice. So there is a lot of thought that went into why this flag is the way it is.
And plus, the flag also changed over time. Like, as America changed, so did the flag. Like, every time we got a new state, there was a new star. You know, after the Civil War, there was a lot of people that got angry. A lot of the Northerners wanted to remove the states that succeeded from the Union flag, but Lincoln disagreed and said, no, we have to keep the Union together, so we're not going to do that. So there's a whole bunch of different times. There was a movement to get Washington, D.C. to draw up rules, get D.C. to have a star on the flag, right? Make it a state and have that. So there's all these different times that they wanted to do it.
It's been unchanged since 1960.
The last time the flag code was updated was 1976, when they update like what to do with a flag, to dispose of a flag, how to fold the flag. The last time that was updated was 76 for the bicentennial.
Absolutely. And this is 27th design that we have currently on the flag. All right. So let's go from, you know, we know about Betsy Ross. We did that flag. Let's go to our next one. What would you say would be our next one? The Great Seal?
It was going to be the Great Seal of the Eagle.
Well, I think the Eagle and the Great Seal, they kind of play along with one another.
So let's do Eagle that moves into the Great Seal, right? Because you can't have that. We talk about all the debate that happened about the flag. There's just as much debate when it comes to the Eagle, which eventually becomes also part of the Great Seal.
Yes, yes,
so
yes.
It took 6 years of arguing for the founding fathers to come up with a national emblem. Everybody knows that Benjamin Franklin originally wanted the turkey because it was like domestic. He said it was useful. and stuff like that. I guess tasty also, but it just wasn't like impressive, I guess, to be put on things like, you know, seeing like a turkey. Imagine today if like that was our national bird, people kind of like, I don't know, laugh at us, I guess. I mean, it is what it is.
I wouldn't laugh at it. Come on.
Yeah. But then you're eating it too on Thanksgiving. Like that's kind of like an awkward thing.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
A lot of other nations were also using eagles. So that's kind of like why they were like, let's do something different. And he also said, listen, eagles are a bird of bad moral character because they're scavengers. They'll steal food from other birds, you know, and stuff like that. So there was different types of eagles. They eventually make the compromise in 1782. They choose the bald eagle, all right, rather than the golden eagle, which was most commonly used by other countries. And because they said, well, the bald eagle was unique to North America and was not used by any other countries, right? But it still had that like noble, you know, impressive nobility look. So because of that, it becomes a natural symbol. And what's odd about that is it actually almost becomes extinct, the national eagle at one point, because we were using DDT and chemicals. In 1940, Congress actually passed a law forbidding killing or capturing of bald eagles because it's the national symbol. And then with the banning of DDT in 1973, it's made a huge comeback in America.
And it's no longer endangered. It's now threatened. It's no longer
threatened. Yeah, well, it's always going to be somewhat endangered, I guess, because of habitat loss and just people coming in. The numbers aren't going to be what they were, but there's a healthy population of them. Because I think bald eagles, too, they mate for life.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like if one goes and it's kind of like a problem. So that's sort of about the bald eagle. And then that leads into the great seal, if you want to take over that piece.
It does, yeah. Just kind of going with the eagle idea. They chose the bald eagle because initially the seal, when they were designing the seal, because they need a seal, right, for official documents, so on and so forth.
Your country need that. That's it.
Yes. So the idea was like, well, they initially had a white eagle, I think. Eagle itself was holding 13 olive branches in like one talon and then 13 arrows in the other, right, in the two talons.
And it'll change the time of war. It'll change.
Yes. And it was like the idea of like power to make peace, while also the arrows will stand for the power to make war, olive branch and the arrows. But the guy that was tasked with designing the seal is the one that actually changed it from the white eagle to the bald eagle, because as you mentioned before, he said, well, it was believed at the time that the eagle would only existed in the North American continent. So it's like, all right, it's specific to our continent. It only exists. Yeah. And they also said long life, great strength, majestic looks. All these are all things why the guy changed it.
But well, it looks cool. And eagles look cool. Like they just do. Yeah. You ever see an eagle flying? Like they look cool. Cool. I mean, whatever it is.
Yeah. Isn't it like the eagle's beak clutches like a banner, and it says in Latin, out of many, one.
Out of many. Well, yeah, these just represent like the colonies coming together, all the different cultures coming together. So it's supposed to mean a lot of different things. Everything means something, right? The eye means the all-seeing eye of divine providence, right? Yep. That's on the back of the seal. Same thing with the letters, the MDCCLXXVI stand for 1776. Which is Roman numeral, like Declaration of Independence. So all these little things are all located there.
Right, the bottom of the shield represents 13 states united in support of like the blue bar at the top of the shield, which is the chief, which like unites the whole and represents Congress. The colors are also those of the same that were used in the flag, alternating red and white for the important balance between innocence and valor. Like that's kind of what they were going there, like vigilance, perseverance, and justice. Eagle's talons, you mentioned, hold the symbols of being able to wage war, but also be peaceful. And then we should really do a podcast on that, because the reverse side of the seal bears a familiar Masonic motif of a pyramid, which the designer, Charles Thompson, said that it was a symbol of strength and duration. And the pyramid, like the new nation, is unfinished and frequently depicted as having 13 steps for the original states. The eye floating, as you mentioned, providence, God, all that stuff, masonry, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of symbolism there, without doubt, yeah.
So yeah, so the seal's pretty much agreed upon. June 20th, 1782, Congress officially adopts the Great Seal of the United States after years of discussion. And the official design is credited to Charles Thompson. So all right, so eagle stems from the fact that Charles Thompson decided to include bald eagle on his seal, which is what kind of led to the bald eagle becoming the
American. Yeah. Once that's put there, they're like, okay, like I said, it looks cool. It pops. No other country had used a bald eagle. Other ones did use the eagle, but not the bald eagle. So let's go with it. Let's run with it.
And I think it's kind of a good segue too, because that's our national bird is the bald eagle, but we have a national mammal. And you kind of mentioned something about that.
Yes, we do have a national mammal, and that's important because right now, July is National Bison Month.
Yep.
So it's a basic, and it became it was pretty recent. It only became the national mammal of the U.S. I don't even know countries did this in 2016. So it's pretty recent where it became the national mammal of the U.S. It's always been a symbol. Like think of like the buffalo quarters and stuff like that. You think of like the plains, you know, you always think of buffalo. And it's because there was such a huge number, like less than 200 years ago, there was about 360 million bison existed. But by the late 1800s, they were pretty much on the verge of extinction. That's what we were talking about before, kind of that dark history right there. If you look at some of those images of just like thousands, maybe millions of bison skulls like stacked on top of each other, right? And the hunter like standing on top of it. You could just ride trains and just shoot them and stuff like that. For not even just for food, just for sport a lot of the time. So at one point it was less than 1,000 remained. It was actually Teddy Roosevelt in 1905 created the American Bison Society, and they kind of worked together to save them from extinction. Like, we need to save this wildlife. And they started putting together national parks, conservation efforts, right? Such as Yellowstone National Park, which I know you've been to, right, Pete?
Yeah. So, actually, Yellowstone, believe it or not, has the largest population of free roaming bison today.
Yeah, I think there's like around 30,000 just there. Like, that's nowhere compared to the numbers that they were. He says about 50,000, about 500,000 are in like zoos, and then he has a whole bunch of, you know, scattered around the whole country too. So they're all over the place. You know, they made a nice comeback somewhat, you know, not what they were before, because of so many lands were taken over for farming and stuff like that. But it is the icon of American history. They said it's a story of conservation success and also like pulling a species back from the brink. And that's one reason why it's recognized as a national mammal of the U.S. Because also if a bison's are there, it shows that it's like a healthy landscape, healthy community. And a lot of people lately have gotten in trouble. I remember seeing online about like trying to take pictures with bisons. It's like, they're not fuzzy cows, you know?
Yeah, no.
They will mess you up. So,
yeah, and it's interesting too, when you are in Yellowstone, like, they take precedence over people. So if they're walking through a street, you stop, the traffic stops, that's their natural habitat. You're gonna have to chill to the side and wait. And this is very sad because the Native Americans lived off the buffalo off the buffalo. They literally, when they killed the buffalo, every single piece of that animal was used for something, versus when the quote unquote white American population got there and started shooting them for sport, the Native Americans didn't understand it while they were killing off their buffalo and just kind of leaving it to rot. Like, oh,
they didn't care. Yeah.
So it's just kind of insane.
Or they would take the head. That's really it.
That's right. So just like the national mammal became a national mammal in May of 2016, some of these other ones I feel like we're going to go to, besides the flag and the bird and the seal, have kind of been created and made into national symbols as time progressed in American history, right? The only one other one that is somehow, I think, connected to the original creation of the nation would be the Liberty Bell.
Yeah, right? Which has an interesting story in its own right.
I think the Liberty Bell that we have in Philadelphia right now is not the Liberty Bell, right?
Well, it all starts in 1751, right? That's when they celebrate the 50th anniversary of the colonies. So this bell was loaded to the Pennsylvania State House, and there was a lot of excitement. People came to hear it, and then they struck it, and they heard like a clank, and then this huge crack opened up. So you have these two people, John Pass and John Stowe, not John Snow. This isn't the
winter storm.
Whatever. Yeah, the old winter guy. And they said they could fix it. So they broke the bell in a bunch of pieces, melted it down, recast it. They added some copper. And then in 1773, here we go, the new bell. People again gathered together. they clang it. It just clunked. Nothing happened. They're like, oh, we got to fix it again. So they take it. They melt it down again. This time they add a bunch of tin. And then it still didn't work. They recast it again. And then the tone was better, but it didn't like meet the people's expectation. They're seeing this big bell. I think it was, I guess, ringing bells back in the 1700s was like a big deal.
Yeah,
there wasn't really much else going on. So it rang for the state house petitions, and the people just didn't like the sound of it. It kind of was ignored. And then the inscription on Liberty Bell, which reads, proclaim liberty throughout all the land and all the inhabitants, therefore, it gained kind of significance during the Declaration of Independence, and it was rung on July 8, 1776. That's kind of how it gets tied in with the American Revolution.
Yep.
Right? It was actually hidden during the Revolutionary War. People knew about this, right? In the church nearby to protect it from the British troops, who would have melted it down for ammunition. And then when the British left, the bell returned. They rang it on July 4th and on special occasions. The Capitals moved to D.C. It stayed in Philadelphia, which is a big deal. And it was rang in remembrance of the death of Supreme Court Justice John Marshall. And that's when it cracked again. And people were getting upset. So and this was in 1835. So the Philadelphia Council said, all right, we need to they actually said, we're just going to get rid of the bell. We're going to toss it in the garbage and get a new one. But the reason that didn't happen isn't because of strong patriotic feeling. It's just there wasn't money for a new bell. It was more expensive to haul the old one away. So the bell just kind of hung around there for years, and they just wouldn't ring it.
In 1846, right, the city decided to repair the bell, right? Because it was George Washington's birthday.
They wanted to ring it. A newspaperman remembered the bell and said we should ring it to celebrate George Washington's birthday. And they're like, oh, yeah, that sounds good.
That sounds good.
cracked again. Gonna
yeah, they did get out these metal workers to actually widen the thin crack to prevent it from further spreading. So they thought by widening it, it would be better. And then it restores like the tone of the bell using a technique called stop drilling. The white crack in the Liberty Bell that you see now is the repair job. Like it was made wider so it stopped cracking more. But even then, it was not successful.
No, so it was cracking. And they're like, all right, we just can't ring this thing again. It just wasn't made right. So about 100 years later, right, by the time the United States made its 100th anniversary, people were really getting like sentimental about anything connected with nation's history because, you know, we were still like a young nation. Yep. So the Pennsylvania State House was now being called Independence Hall. And the Liberty Bell was placed there on display. And on January 76, as part of the bicentennial, the bell was moved to its own glass case across from the hall. It's still there.
The rest is history, yeah. Do you know that no one living today has heard the bell ringing freely?
I think what they do, not freely. They do like gently tap it with a mallet. Occasionally, like they'll do that for special occasions, but they don't actually like
ring it.
It's just kind of like they just kind of tap it like more of a symbol than anything else.
Well, the computer model provided like clues on what it would sound like. They kind of scanned the whole thing and put it in. So we have an idea of what it sounded like in 1700s, but that's computer created AI stuff.
It's still a cool story, I guess. I guess it's still
a cool story.
Just like, why did this thing? They were going to throw it out. That's like, to think of how much history that was thrown out. Because people were just like, yeah, we don't need this. You know,
nuts.
But it's just too much money to haul this thing away. Like, all right, fine, we'll keep it.
Right. And normally the bell itself, like when each town or city had a bell and it would ring when it was time for news, either to get
gathered around,
gathering around any form of gathering of ministers or just
like the tweet of the 1750s.
Exactly. They do believe that the bell that is Philadelphia right now is the one that potentially did ring on Declaration of Independence Day, which was July 8th, 1776, to kind of let people know that we declared independence. Now, in 1830s, the abolitionists actually adopted the bell as a symbol for their struggle to abolish slavery. So it further added the symbolism to the bell itself. And they're the ones that popularized the name Liberty Bell. It was actually more associated not with liberty from the British in 1700s, but became known really as a Liberty Bell more so because of the abolition movement and, you know, ending of slavery, liberty, hence. Between 1885 and 1915, the bell traveled all over in exhibitions and patriotic events. They would be like borrowed and taken out before it kind of was kept where it is today at the Liberty Bell Center. And you guys can see it. Did you see it?
I've seen the Liberty Bell. I've seen the Liberty Bell.
A long time to go see it. It's always a big line.
Like, you know, people want to see it. They want to get their picture, you know, and stuff like that. It's, you know, it's a part of American history. Everyone's heard about it since they were little kids.
Which one do you want to go to next? Because there's we could go to National Anthem. We do that quick. People know this one. But then we could also go to the Pledge of Allegiance, which...
To the Pledge, then we'll go to National Anthem, and then we have to do Uncle Sam and the Statue of Liberty. And then we can
Perfect. One or two of that. Pledge of Allegiance, that is one of my earliest memories in the United States. I don't know if I've ever said this on a podcast. I might have.
Now you better say it, man.
Well, now I have to say it. But when I came to the U.S. in elementary school... So I didn't speak a word of English, right? Big Bird is really kind of how I learned English, just watching, you know, PBS. But I remember my first day of school, we arrived in the summer. So again, very limited, pretty much no English. I go to my first day of school, and within like the first 10 minutes, I'm super scared. I don't speak English. And within the first 10 minutes, you know, the announcements go on and everyone stands up and they start saying the Pledge of Allegiance. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, what is this? So like, I got up and here I am standing there and I'm like, I don't want to look stupid. So I'm like, I don't know the words. And I'm thinking to myself, like, was there a summer assignment? Like, how did they know this poem? Like, were we supposed to learn it over the summer? Like, I had no idea what the actual Pledge of Allegiance was, like the actual symbol of it. I'm like, what is this? Because you didn't have that in communist Poland. But the irony of this, that the actual Pledge of Allegiance that was written in 1892, it was written by a socialist named Francis Bellamy, and it was originally published in a Youth's Companion in September of 1892, and Bellamy hoped that the pledge would be used by citizens of any country, which is the irony, so I could have been saying this in Poland.
Yeah, so what it was, I guess you just wanted me to say the old pledge?
Yeah, it was the old one,
As written, it says, I pledge allegiance to my flag and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So similar.
Yeah.
Right? It's going to be very similar. I know this too, because my 4-year-old recently, they had like American, I don't know what it was, but they had to I guess America Day at school, you know, like right towards the end, all the kids had it came up and they actually said not only their Pledge of Allegiance, they also said their preamble to the Constitution.
Oh, so wow.
So my 4-year-old had memorized the preamble. So he's walking around the house, like saying the preamble to the Constitution.
Like, dude, that's more than probably like, that's more than probably.
I have students in AP Gov that probably don't know the preamble to the Constitution, but
I learned it from the song. Remember? Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock.
The words that pledge allegiance, right, to my flag were changed to the flag of the United States of America in 1923.
Yeah, that's when, D.C. decided to change the words. They decided to do that,
It was later also changed in 1954 in response to the communist threat. President Eisenhower encouraged Congress to add the words under God.
Yeah.
That creates the 31-word pledge we kind of know today. Bellamy's daughter objected to this alteration. Initially, she thought, she's like, no, that's not how my father intended it. This whole God indivisible and all that stuff. But, hey, it stuck. There's a lot of rules with the Pledge of Allegiance, and they have changed over the years. But
I remember when I was in school, you had to say it. Like, you had to stand up and say it every day. Like, it became very just, that's what you did every morning.
And for those of our listeners that are not in education, just so you guys know, students no longer have to stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance.
No, then I think it used to be you had to at least stand and acknowledge it. I remember for a while, it was like you didn't have to say it, right?
Yep.
But you had to stand up and acknowledge the flag. And then it became, no, you don't have to do that either.
Yep. No, literally, our students could sit and not say anything.
Yeah, they're not supposed to text.
Yeah, right. I've had some students over the years that have not, you know, done anything, just sat. But for the most part, like, I'm pretty loud when I say it. You know, when I get up, I'm like, I pledge allegiance. Like, I try to get everyone into it.
We're history teachers, too.
We're history teachers, Oh, my, it's like my highlight of the day. When I hear the dee, I'm like, ah, I pledge allegiance.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sure.
So some rules with regards to this, right? Standing at attention, facing the flag, right hand over your heart. But when not in uniform, men should remove any non-religious headdress. That's kind of what it was, right? With their right hand and hold it in the left shoulder. So if you have a hat, the hand being over the heart. Persons in uniform should remain silent, face the flag, and render the military salute. So if you're, you know, uniform, you got a salute. The original Bellamy salute, first described in 1892 by Francis Bellamy, said that after reciting the words to the flag, the arm was then, if you were given the Pledge of Allegiance, the arm was then extended toward the flag, kind of like in like a Hitler salute.
Yeah, that's why they kind of stopped doing that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Because it didn't really, if you ever see pictures of that, like it looks like a Nazi salute, but it's with the American flag. But it's not a Nazi salute. The Nazis didn't even exist at the time.
No. Nope.
Once the Nazis started doing that, it's also why it kind of shifted. So let's place your hand over your heart. You know, let's not do that. let's not have that visual.
Nah. You know? And it's crazy though, because if you look at pictures from 1920s, like kids are just like Hitler saluting to the American flag. It's pretty intense.
Yeah.
But again, Hitler was a nobody then, so no one really.
No, it wasn't what it was because see, we always come back to the Nazis somehow.
I don't know. It's just always come back to the Nazis. Beating up on the Nazis. All right, so like in God We Trust, President Dwight D. Eisenhower approved the joint resolution in 84th Congress declaring that In God We Trust could be the official natural motto of the United States of America. This was kind of concurrent with when he added Under God to the Pledge of Allegiance. So this motto actually took over the initial motto, like pluribus unum, I guess?
Yeah, e pluribus unum.
Which had been used since the initial 1776 design of the Great Seal. And from that point forward, In God We Trust became our motto, 1956. All right, so national anthem. I think we could just bang this one out quick. We all know
this. We talked about it in our coverage of the War of 1812. So just go
absolutely.
Back.
And so it's all we have to know is that Francis Scott Key wrote a poem called The Star Spangled Banner. That poem is eventually turned into a song using music from an old English drinking song,
which is apparently a very difficult song too. I guess people sing it just to sing it, but it's not. They said 99% of Americans don't have the quality of voice to actually sing it how it's supposed to be sung.
Yep, unless you are Whitney Houston.
And then I think like Leanna Rimes, I think, sang a really good version.
And what's the name? Did an awesome job last year, Chris Stapleton. It did not become our official national anthem. People don't know this until 1931. It was during the Great Depression when the president. When we were running for election, you had FDR was running for election. There was ideas that like we need something to unite the people, and there was a lot of discussion whether America the Beautiful, right? Like which one should become the national anthem? And again, in 1931, it was voted on, and decided that the Star Spangled Banner would become our national anthem.
And the flag that actually inspired it, the one that flew over Fort McHenry, right? That Francis saw is actually in the Smithsonian Museum, that actual flag that that flew over the fort. So you can see the flag that inspired the poem that led to the national anthem being written.
Yep.
Kind of like a connection there.
Ta-da. All right, what else you got? What's another symbol we got?
I think one that's definitely a symbol people know about, it's got to be Uncle Sam.
Of course.
So most people think of Uncle Sam as the, you know, old guy with a top hat, long beard with the finger saying, you know, we want you. So there's a lot of debate, like, was he actually real or not? One belief that there was a man named Sam Wilson that was actually from Arlington, Massachusetts in 1766. He might have been the inspiration for it. There were 13 kids in the family. He was number 7, and they were all very patriotic. He worked in the meatpacking industry. He was tall and lean, but he never had a beard. So that's why people weren't sure. But he did always stand out in a crowd, they said, because he was pretty tall and loud and very patriotic. So they think he became known as Uncle Sam through his nieces and nephews. And he used to supply pork and beef to the army during the War of 1812. So they think he also became a meat inspector. So they think that name kind of got this Uncle Sam. He's the meat guy, you know.
Yeah.
So the barrels of meat he inspected personally from his factory would say U.S. States on it, but later would just say U.S. So all people just took that. Oh, this meat is from Uncle Sam, and that's just kind of how the name with his company just kind of like got out there.
Yeah, but the whole Uncle Sam's been around in political cartoons for quite a while.
Yeah, that's how the name probably got. Then and the cartoon image, Red, White, and Blue came didn't first appear until 1830. That was the first time he appeared in like cartoons, like you said. Or
and then J.M. Flagg's 1917 posters, the one you probably everyone
that's what everyone knows as Uncle Sam. Yeah,
this one was actually borrowed from an old British poster. You had the Lord Kitchener poster 3 years earlier that was trying to get Britons and British people in World War I to enlist, and it was the same thing. He was pointing out and the same thing, like, you know, wants you, and except the Americans took it and threw Uncle Sam in it, and it became I want you for the U.S. Army nearest recruiting station. And that's World War I. But it was that image of him pointing at you is actually borrowed from a British image. Da, 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 da.
Like, there's been some criticism of the Uncle Sam saying, you know, it's not representing diversity and stuff like that culture. In 1961, Congress did pass a special resolution accepting Uncle Sam Wilson of Troy, New York, the one we just talked about, the one I talked about as the namesake behind Uncle Sam. And September 13th is now known as Uncle Sam Day in New York State. So. They say, well, they're following that thing. But everyone, when you see Uncle Sam, you know it. You see those pictures from World War One, World War Two, the top hat,
okay.
The very patriotic, like 4th of July place is always someone dressed up as Uncle Sam and stuff like that.
I think there's only a few left. I mean, I'm sure we could probably come up with some other ones. But Statue of Liberty, I think.
We have to do Statue of Liberty. I got to do Statue of Liberty.
So Statue of Liberty was a gift from the people of France to the people of the United States. We know that. Sculptor Frederick Bertholdi was asked to design the actual statue for America's 100th birthday in 1876. The issue was that France was like, we're going to give you this statue. And Americans were like, where do we put it?
They wanted to give it because they decided in 1865 to actually do that because they wanted to show support of the assassination of Lincoln. And then they decided it's going to take time to do it. And they're like, all right, well, the 100th birthday is coming up. We'll have this statue done by then. Yeah, but we're like, where are we going to put it? We never asked for this. You know?
Exactly. Not like it's a small thing. You could like, oh, let's put it in a corner.
Yeah.
So we had initially many problems with raising money for the base itself. Like, where do we do it? So once it was decided that it was going to go in New York Harbor, from that point forward, you had massive fundraising to try to raise enough money.
In France. So they're trying to raise money in France. Like, we're building this for the people of America.
So that was for the actual statue. But for the base itself, those fundraisers were in the United States.
Yeah.
It was like, all right, they're giving us this. We need a base. And it took forever. It set the project back 10 years because they...
Yes, it was not going to be ready in time.
Couldn't get the money to actually build the base for this thing. But on October 28th, 1886, the Statue of Liberty officially opened in New York Harbor. Today, it greets travelers from New York and inspires all who look upon Lady Liberty. I mean, this really is an American symbol, no question about it.
Well, you see, it becomes bigger with the immigration coming from Europe, right, during the 1800s. Yeah. That's the first thing they come, right? Liberty Island, which was closed for a number of years. It only recently opened up again between COVID and even after the terrorist attacks of 9/11, they closed down for a while, right? It was copper sheets replaced on the molds. That's why they became oxidized, right? That's why they're
green.
They were like, they look like a penny at first, Lady Liberty. Yeah, I've been there a couple times. I'm sure you've been there too. You can't go into, I don't think you can even go in the crown anymore. You couldn't go into the
Just to go inside, you need to order ahead. You need to actually.
Oh yeah, you can't even go on the in the torch anymore. That was like stopped in like the 1900s, early 1900s. So. Well, yeah. There was like a fire, and they just never repaired the staircase, so they never fixed that. But then, and they did fix. Well, they also fixed the torch too at one point. I know the original torch is
in the 80s. They remember there had like a scaffold around the whole thing.
They had to redo it, yeah, because they had to. So the original torch is, I think, in like the base, but you can see it. There's a new torch up there. You used to be able to go to the crown. I don't think you're allowed in the statue itself at all anymore. Like you said, maybe special times. Probably the famous thing is it's often called the New Colossus. And on Sacheverry's holding book, right? And on it, I'll describe the words from Emma Lazarus's poem. And it says, "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses, yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shores. Send these to homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." So it's kind of like the entryway into the United States, right? Land of opportunity. Yeah. You want to be cynical.
There's so much
symbolism. Be cynical, but there's so much symbolism. Yeah, it's on the five. There's 5 points coming off the base.
You have the tablet in her left hand, obviously inscribes July 4th, 1776, right? Recognizes the creation of the United States of America. The 7 rays of her crown represent the 7 continents of the earth. Mm-hmm. Then at her feet are broken chains and shackles. They represent the throwing off of tyranny and oppression. Then you have the torch as a symbol of liberty itself, right? The source of the statue's official name, Liberty Enlightening the World. That's the actual name of Statue of Liberty, Liberty Enlightening the World. And she's striding forward, symbolic of leading the way and lighting the path of liberty and freedom. What were you saying about the 5 things? That's the base?
That's the base of just the 5 points. So it's like there's like a star, if you actually would see it, from above.
I mean, I can't. What else you
got? There's plenty of other ones. Like there's Mount Rushmore, obviously.
Well, Mount Rushmore. Oh, yeah, okay. You want to do that one? We could do that one.
Well, I mean, we can just give a little bit of symbolism. We don't think about it. But like, you know, so it's Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, and Roosevelt. That's always a question I always ask my students, like kind of like a trivia, like who are the presidents on Mount Rushmore? You'd be surprised how often they don't know. But Washington is there for his role in creating the Constitution. Jefferson is there for the Declaration of Independence and Louisiana Purchase. Lincoln is there for leading the country to the Civil War. And then Theodore Roosevelt is there for part making the Panama Canal and linking the two oceans together. And the idea was they were supposed to be, I think, full body at one point, right?
They were. Or at least the torso. It was supposed to be the torso.
But that was going to take way too long. And there's always talk about adding another face right there.
This political age, imagine trying to figure out.
You're never going to get a president that's going to support it. And even back then, it was kind of like who should be on it and stuff like that.
Well, people are upset with Teddy. They're like, why does Teddy get on here? Like, how does Teddy compare to
also the Sioux Lincoln? The Sioux Indians were very upset.
Still are.
Because it was a sacred. There was a sacred ground. It was sacrilege. You know, other people thought it was like an eyesore. It was all made as a again, we say American symbolism, but really it was made as a tourist destination, right?
Yep, I've been there, and it's a pretty big tourist trap. You know,
there's not much else.
There's nothing else there. Nothing. Yeah. Else there. No.
That's really it.
I mean, it's still cool nonetheless, but not much there. I don't know why I didn't notice. I almost like feel embarrassed. What's the national flower of the United States?
I'm not really sure.
See? Exactly. I didn't know we had a national flower. It's the rose. It was designated as the official flower, right, an emblem of the United States of America in 1986. So it is fairly recent, I guess. And they say that it's because it grows naturally throughout North America and it blooms in several colors, including red, pink, white, or yellow. You know, it's a symbol of love, beauty, war, and politics all over the world. So why not, right? Several of the 50 states have also adopted the rose as the official state flower. So New York, Oklahoma, Georgia, Iowa, and North Dakota. Yeah. I had no idea that the rose was.
What's the national tree?
Oh, dude. Oh, wait. Oak.
It's the oak tree. Yeah, that which makes sense, obviously.
That does make sense.
And the other ones we all basically covered.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all the American.
Yeah, I mean, there's other things like there's memorials. Obviously, we're not going to get into memorials. That can be another separate pop. Like the Lincoln Memorial, Jefferson Memorial. That's all different things. And there's going to be a bunch of other things out there that scream, you know, a hot dog and hamburgers, fireworks.
I was going to say that. Like, can you think of like modern social? Think of like modern social symbols or cultural symbols of America. Modern cultural symbols of America. Go hot dog.
It's going to be a baseball, the food, you know, things like that, the fireworks, the exploding fireworks.
True.
Certain our coinage, right, and stuff like that. It's really going to be your context, too. Some people who are anti-American judges here, but around the world are going to see going to say different things, you know? So,
would you say if you had to choose a car, the American car, I would say Corvette or Mustang?
I was going to say Mustang, yeah.
Yeah.
Corvette,
right? That could be a symbol.
Right. You could say, like, you know, the Harley Davidson, right?
Right.
Be like inspiration, stuff like that.
We live in an age too that now symbols are being attacked, just like a lot of other history is being attacked.
Well, some of it you can argue some of the symbols would definitely don't hold up over time. Like imagine if you still saluted the flag the old way.
Well, that's why we tweaked
it. Yeah, so there's tweaks, there's changes. So Some things are, I guess, easier to change than others, and some things people want to change. Some people say some things people don't want to change, though.
Exactly.
That's all. But hopefully this was educational to people out there. A little fun, you know, having in the background, you know, when next year when you're cooking up some hot dogs or something, or next time you're barbecuing this summer.
Right. You'd be like, not? Did you know?
Yeah, do some, make yourself sound smart when you're trying That's all.
And make sure, you know, you say like, you know, you guys should listen to History Teachers Talking Podcast.
Yeah. Download.
Anyway, guys, just before we let you go this week, we want to let you know that we do have a merch store just open on our website. You guys could buy t-shirts, sweatshirts, and so on and so forth. I already got some of mine. My wife's just like, well, you can't wear History Teachers Talking stuff every single day. And I'm like, well, I bought enough stuff for everybody.
It's a free country.
I know, right? Like, I bought enough. I mean, like, I have too much stuff now. If you guys visit our website, it is there. If you ever want to visit our website, it is www.historyteacherstalkingpodcast.com. You can email us from there. You can listen to our podcast from there. It actually has links to all of our social media. So if you guys want to go and follow any of those accounts, you can do that as well. And it now has our merchandise store. So, you know, if you want to represent us in any way, shape, or form, and get yourself a t-shirt, why not? And I guess that's it, right, Tom? I think that pretty much covers it. Mm-hmm. That pretty much covers it. So thank you so much again for listening, guys, and we'll see you again next week.
Stay safe, everybody.
I hope everyone enjoyed our podcast, and if you would like to email us, you can do so at historyteacherspodcast@gmail.com.